Hey guys, I'm gonna hold on for a minute because there's only seven people here right now. So let's see if anyone else shows up.
Maybe they don't know the password.
Maybe they don't. And maybe they're too afraid to ask. But it's in Slack, so hopefully they can find it. Hey, David, do you know where that like little, I don't know if I'll get to it, but do you know where that password program lives in the CSI folder?
I don't know. I'll try to find it though.
I was looking for it. I thought it was in either labs or miss or activity, but I'm just like not seeing it. Like I said, I might not even get there today, but and to have it queued up just in case. All right, well, that's okay.
You don't remember what the name of it was, do you?
Okay, we have a few people now. I mean, nine. So I guess we can start for you guys. So I obviously wasn't here last time. You guys did demo stuff with David and Saroj for getting started with the Tac Lab. How did that go? Do you guys have any questions? Have any of you tried to start a Tac Lab stuff so far?
No, not yet.
Okay, cool. I mean, a Tac Lab, I don't know if you haven't been reading ahead, I don't know if a Tac Lab would make a ton of sense beyond just trying to like brute force through things yet. So hopefully we'll get to some of that stuff today that'll help you work through a Tac Lab in like a measured way. Remember that this one, you just have to turn in a text file with your answers and like letting us know, like basically comments to let us know like why your answers work and what like the bytes are referring to and how that happens. So easy stuff. I actually think a Tac Lab is faster even than Bomb Lab. So we'll see how you guys feel about it and how you do with it. But I think it is like we're like a month out almost from final stuff, so we're getting close. What else? We don't have class on Friday, obviously, and they also canceled any of your Thursday classes. So if you have class tomorrow, that's also canceled. I'm sure you guys knew that. I think that might be it for admin stuff. If you do have issues as far as like downloading or starting up a Tac Lab stuff, let us know. I think if you didn't get to see the demo with David and Saroj, of course, there's a video of it up that you can watch. And like, I think when they first presented it, it was just a follow along, but you could also walk through them, do that stuff with them on your own and get started. And if you still have questions after that, I guess let us know, or if something seems like it's not working correctly. Yeah, I'm just gonna go see if I can find this folder really fast. Anything else? Any other?
I just sent you the path of that file in the chat.
Thank you. I saw that. I'm just going to see that right now. I would have not looked there, so. Okay, cool. Okay, let me pull up slides and we'll talk about where we left off and what's next. Did you guys get lecture after demo stuff, or did you just watch video on your own for that?
We just left after the demo
stuff. Okay, cool. So that's fine. I will like go back over some of that stuff. Kind of what I figured. We always go a little bit faster, so catching up for us shouldn't be too bad. Okay.
You guys have any idea what they're going to be doing for summer classes?
I don't know, actually. I haven't heard anything. I don't think this, I know that the school hasn't put anything out, at least I might not be on those lists anyway. I weirdly get left off of stuff. But I haven't heard anything for summer class stuff. Is it anybody else?
It might be online, mostly.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it was online. Especially because when do classes start? June for summer, or do they start in May?
June.
Okay. Yeah, I would not be surprised if that was the case, if everything's still online until the fall, just to be safe. Yeah, I know. Does anybody have internships for this summer?
No one wanted it.
Yeah, I've been wondering how internships are gonna work. I actually just like interviewed for one that is a remote internship, and I'm like, all right, well, that'll be not as fun, but interesting. So let me pull, can I be co-host? And then I can share my screen with you guys. Cool. Thank you. Okay, so this should look familiar. We went over this stuff. So we went over this the last class. I went through with you guys some of the like control, the passing control between procedures and how that works and what happens with the stack. We talked about the stack a little bit more than we have in the past. So we started getting a little bit more in depth there. This should all be review stuff, but if you have any questions about this, if like in the meantime, if you've been doing reading or if you had questions you did not get to ask last time, please let me know. I'll try to answer them. I think we even went through this stuff and we maybe stopped at data flow. Cool. Yes. Okay. So let's look at this little bit of code, and I apologize, like last time, all of our code examples are our book examples, and they use AT&T, so it's a struggle for me, and I'm sure probably for some of you. Oops, that was too far back. Okay, so we've talked about how control flow works. We haven't talked about things like data flow and how like variables and parameters and things like that work. But we have kind of looked at that stuff in the past. So you should remember this. We have gone over it. If you remember our calling convention for our like register conventions for storing variables and passing parameters, remember we've got that RDI, RSI, RDX stuff. I told you guys, we always give you this stuff if there's ever an exam, but to memorize it, it's really easy. Just remember Diane's dress costs $89. And that will get you through that. And then also by convention, that return value will always get stored in RAX. So this should be familiar to you. I think from talking about some of the memory hierarchy stuff and some other things, you should also be kind of obvious why we like to use registers. It's really, really fast to access registers. And it's convenient for us to be able to store things there. So that works as long as we only have 6 arguments, right? But it's not unusual for functions to need more than room for 6 arguments. And in that case, we will utilize the stack and allocate space on the stack for those extra arguments. And we only do that when it's necessary, but that is like the next step whenever we have 7 or more. Okay, so let's look at some actual code. Let me try to move this so that I can see it. Okay, so we have a couple of functions here. We've got this mult store function, and then we have mult two. So mult store calls mult two. Mult store is going to pass in 3 parameters, 2 longs, and a pointer to a long. And we will pass those then, and then we'll call mult to pass in the x and y parameters that we've already passed in and store the result of that return to a long t, which is one of our local variable. And then we'll set this destination pointer to point to t, right? That should be fairly easy to parse out. If we look at like what's actually going on in the assembly here and look a little bit deeper. So just looking at this and knowing our conventions, we should know that x, y, and this destination pointer should get stored in RDI, RSI, and RDX respectively, right? That makes sense. So we will do that. And then this is like a little bit less intuitive maybe, but whatever the return is going to eventually be, will get stored in RAX. So here, this T never gets returned, but that's still going to be like our final result there. So that is, because it's the return that was returned from mult 2, it also gets stored to RAX, I believe is what's correct. Okay, so we can walk through this. We will move RDX to RBX. So we're gonna save that actual destination. We're gonna call mult2. In mult2, we're gonna pass in RDI and RSI, right? We're passing in X and Y, and then we're going to manipulate those and return. We multiply A and B, which are our old X and Y, and we're going to return them as S, but that S is an RAX. So that's just kind of like a little example of how that stuff works. I don't know if we do more with this. Let's look ahead a little bit. No, it's okay. So that's just kind of like an illustration of like how these things kind of come together and how they work and how we move data around using registers. So we know that we use stacks four procedures. We use stacks in languages that support recursion, like C and Java. And the code must be re-entranced. So what this means is that even though we have a single procedure, each time it gets called, it gets its own stack frame. So you can kind of think of that as like each instance of this procedure gets its own stack frame, which I think is kind of something, kind of a concept that we're used to in the same way that like each process gets its own stuff. Each like instance of these procedures also have their own like states that need to be stored and dealt with. So we use the stack because we need some place to store each state of this procedure instantiation. And, you know, each time that procedure runs, we have our own arguments and local variables and returns that we have to deal with, and they're going to be different, right? And I think we're going to get an example of this, but hold off just a second. So the state for each given procedure is only needed for a limited time, only while that procedure is actually being run. So yeah, from when it's called to when it returns. And I don't know if we've like explicitly talked about this yet, but it helps to think about the different like procedures in terms of the callee and the caller. The caller procedure is the procedure that calls the callee. So like in this case, the caller is mult store, the callee is mult two. And the callee will return obviously before the caller does. And I guess I've used this word, but maybe not explicitly defined it for you guys. Our stack for each of these procedures is allocated in frames. So each procedure will have its own stack frame, its own like stack space that will hold that state for that single instantiation from call to return, right? Questions? Because I feel like I just threw a lot of stuff at you. Is everybody okay with that so far? Okay, so we have an example of this call chain. We've got three different functions. We've got you, we've got who, and am I. So you calls who calls am I, and am I is recursive and calls itself. And who actually calls am I twice. So here is an example of that call chain. We're going to take a look at what that looks like as far as stack allocation. So before we do that, let's talk about what the stack frame actually looks like. So this is our stack. So we have our previous frame from the, you know, whatever caller function there was. We have our return information, any local storage that we might need, and any temporary space that we might need. We also have, you're familiar with our stack pointer, that RSP. We could also have a stack, like a base pointer, which would be our BP by convention, but that's not always used for that. That's kind of optional. And it can be, you'll see, even if you see RBP, it can actually be used for different things. So it's not always used as the stack base pointer. Sorry, that was really hard to say for some reason. So the way that we manage this is that space is allocated whenever we enter a procedure. And actually, when we start looking more, you may have noticed this when you were looking at BobLab, because it might have thrown you off a little bit. But now that we're talking about stack stuff a little bit more, you'll start to see or understand why when we enter a function, you'll see subtracts, right? So those subtracts are setting up space and allocating space on our stack for whatever we might need for that stack frame for that procedure, right? And then right before we return, we always like add stuff back, right? Because we're gonna deallocate that stuff that we don't need. So that's kind of what this management pointer or bullet is talking about. The space that is allocated when we enter procedure is kind of set up stuff that we call that setup code. It kind of always looks the same. It's going to subtract something. And that is, includes a push because of that call instruction. So it pushes that return address as well. And then whenever we deallocate, so whenever we return from the callee function, we're going to add back that space to the stack. So we will finish that code, and we'll also pop with that return instruction so that we can get back to that return address. Okay, so let's kind of walk through this this call. I'm not really sure what to call this. We'll just trace this this call, this number of calls by, you know, these different functions. So we start with you, and this is what the stack looks like. Here we are using RBP, so we've got the base of that stack frame, and we have the top of that stack frame that is use stack frame, right? So that's everything they need right there. They are going to call who. So we're going to get a new stack frame for who, and who call am I. So same thing there. Am I calls itself. So you can see here, even though this is the same procedure, it gets its own, like we talked about before, its own stack frame because it's its own instance of that procedure. And because who calls it again, there it is again. And then the same thing happens as, well, the opposite thing happens as we start to return from these functions, right? So we're like backing out into like old stack frames and deallocating that space. There, that's actually, I think, who's second called am I. So there we go. So this is actually, like, even though it might look kind of complicated, really what you're getting from this is the way that like the stack space, this like piece of memory, gets allocated and deallocated as procedures get called and returned from, right? So the stack frame exists for as long as it's needed, and then it doesn't. And as we talked about before, that all that information is still on the stack, but it won't get accessed anymore because of like where our stack pointer is currently pointing. And it will, you know, obviously at some point get overwritten, most likely. Okay, so let's take another look at, or maybe we haven't taken this in depth of a look at our stack frame before. So we have this part up top that is used by the caller. And that is where our return address gets pushed. Any arguments that it was using that were greater than 7, so any that it couldn't store in any of the registers would be there. So that is what is referred to as argument build. So, local variables. The argument build is the parameters for the function about to call. And it also has to, and we'll see why later on, it also has to save the context of its own registers in case those need to be restored. It also has that old frame pointer, that old RBP, in case we have to restore that. Again, that's optional. But in the same way that like RSP has to be pushed and then restored, you could see why we'd have to do that with RBP too. Those are going to change in the same way. So I don't know what just happened. There we go. Okay. We have, here it is. So here's our caller stack frame. We've got our return address that we push so that we can come back. And then we have the arguments for that call. So any arguments that need to get passed in that are greater than 7. Does anybody have questions about this? I don't know if that was like the clearest. This gets a little bit complex to explain, but I think when you actually understand it, it's not that complex. So I just want to make sure that like it's coming across okay. Okay, cool. Okay, so let's look at, I think this is like a little bit simpler bit of code to look at. We have this function incr, which is gonna pass in a pointer to a long p and a long val. And we're going to store those as local variables. We're gonna store this pointer to x. We're gonna dereference the pointer, store that value to x. We're going to use this variable y, and that's going to be that value that p was pointing to plus the value that we passed in as a parameter. And then we're going to restore this new value. It's like added the sum value in that place where x originally was. So back to p. And then we actually return our original x, our original value that was pointed to in that with that p. And if we look at this in our assembly, we are going to move that value that is pointed to by p, which gets passed into RDI, that pointer value there. We're going to dereference that and move that to RIX, because eventually we're going to return x, right? So we do that, and then we're going to add x plus what got passed in second, so RSI, that long value, and then we're going to reassign that pointer, that whatever was in that address, we're going to reassign that as RSI, as that summed value. Cool. So here's the registers that we used. RDI was P, RSI was val and Y, and REX is X and the return value. Okay, so let's look at that and look at the stack at the same time. So this is, we're going to give actual values here. V1, we're going to assign to 15213. We're going to create a pointer to that, and we're going to store that on the stack. And then we're going to pass in that pointer value and this other value, 3000. So we've got those two long. So then if we go to I can't tell if this is labeled incorrectly or if I'm just missing something. Okay, so I think this should just be INCR when we call it. We're going to create some stack, some space on the stack, right? Remember we talked about that subtract that often happens. So we're going to subtract 16 bytes so that we have a place for some of these variables. We're going to move that value to this address that is now RSP plus 8, right? So that value that was pointed to is now RSP plus 8. So that pointer value will be that. Whatever that calculated address is of RSP plus 8. We will move that second parameter, 3000, into, I mean, really this is just a piece of ESI because 3000 is small enough that it doesn't have to like use that whole long, or a piece of RSI, so it only uses ESI here. And then we're going to do that kind of math, so that's some arithmetic stuff to it, and eventually we're going to return what's in RAX. Questions? If there are questions about exactly what's happening, they might be answered in the next couple of slides. So if there are questions about some of this assembly stuff, I think we're getting there. But you can see that we have like our initial stack structure. We've got, we pushed our return address, and then we decremented RSP to be able to put those other, to add a variable, to add some data, and also we have some extra space allocated as well. And then right before we return, we're gonna add that back and deallocate that stuff. So I think that's the important thing. You guys are very quiet, so I can't tell if any of this is making sense or if I'm even talking to anybody. Is everything okay?
Copy that.
Okay, cool. Okay. Okay, so if we look at that function that gets called, well, let's look at the stack a little bit more in depth for, I think, both of these. So when we call increment, we are, like I said, we're going to store that 15213 to the stack. We're going to use RDI to store the pointer to that. So to store that RSP plus 8 pointer. And then we're going to store RSI in, we're going to store 3000 in RSI. So once we start doing some math here, we're going to add what's in RDI and what's in what we're pointing to there. So we're going to add 3000 and that old value, which was 15213. There we go. We're going to then assign that to REX so we can get returned because we've overwritten that old value that was in RSP plus 8. And we are then back at our return address, right? So we'll return back to that point and we will restore our stack. Okay, so now we're back to like our old, our original return address that was there in call increment. Okay, we talked about this a little bit. So we have our conventions that help us talk about this. Who calls who, you as the caller, who is the callee. And now we're going to talk about using our registers for temporary storage. So if you think about this, we have this register, in this case, we have RDX, which is being utilized both of these procedures and, you know, manipulated by both of these procedures. Which is very much not uncommon, right? Because utilizing registers is very useful, so it's not unusual for functions to each do that. So this could cause us, obviously, if both of these functions are storing important things or any kind of data in RDS and then need to access that data again, and somebody else has written that data with something that is different than what it's supposed to be. So there has to be some sort of coordination between these different procedures as far as to how that will work. So there are two conventions. We've got caller saved, which means the caller will save temporary values in its frame before the call. So before any function gets called, all the any register value that like needs to be saved will be stored on the stack and then or stored in other registers. And then whenever we return, those will be restored before anything else happens, right? Before we start continuing execution. We also have callee saved, which is, I don't want to say it's the opposite, but that, it, I guess it kind of is. This is where the callee will save the temporary values from that caller procedure in its frame before using it. And then it's on the callee to restore those values, those original values, before returning to the caller. Okay. I think that just to make sure I have enough time before we move on to more register usage stuff, because we're almost done. And this is all stuff that you're kind of familiar with. I'll run through this really fast. So we know we should be pretty familiar by now that REX by convention, and these are all just conventions, like this is just the way that we do things so that it all can work together. REX is gonna be our return value. We use RDI through R9 as arguments, and then we can use other registers like R10 and R11 for other things. By convention, these are caller saved temporaries, and RBX, R12, R13, and R14 are callee saved temporaries. We can also, if we're not using RBP as a base pointer, we can use that as a callee saved temporary as well. It's kind of like mix and match that stuff and figure out when we're using which for which. And then RSP, as we know, is a form of callee save, and that is our stack pointer that gets restored to its original value whenever we exit a procedure that gets popped off the stack and returned to. Okay, I want to run through activity before I leave you guys. I think it's like a nice little illustration of some of the stuff that you'll be doing in Attack Club. Let me reshare. So we have this program called password check. It's really simple. All it's going to do when we run it is ask you for a password and check to see if that was correct. So let's just enter any password, wrong password, and it seems like check password. It's a sign that you're going to be given privileges. Okay, so this is like really simplistic from this. Is it a good illustration of things that happen in the real world? It's sort of chat and you pass some resource that you either should or should not have access to. So let's take a look at the actual, so we in this case have the source code for this. So let's just take a look at the source code for this program. Okay, so we've got a character buffer, it's of length 15. We have this int that gets stored for the password. We can see we use gets with buffer to go ahead and get that command line. We can see it does a string compare between buffer and this string here, love 2467. And then if it does not equal that, it's going to tell us it's a wrong password. And if it does, it's going to tell us it's correct and update correct pass, right? So let's see, let's get out of here. Okay, so let's see what happens if we run this again and put in that password. Okay, so so it works exactly how we would expect that to work. We put in the password that it was looking for. It told us correct password. We were given these root privileges. So let's play with this a little bit, right? So we have, let's try running this. And this is going to be like really similar to stuff that you're doing in Attack Lab. So let's just put in some, some long string of characters of like arbitrary length. Okay, so now we had a few things happen. It told us wrong password. It told us root privileges given to the user, and then it had a segmentation fault. So something weird is going on with this program. So we know that our, I don't know how many characters this is, it's quite a few, but we also know that we have that buffer that was of length 15. Let's go ahead and run that again, and let's put in 15 characters. I think that was 15. Okay, so it's still working the way that it's supposed to. Let's see what happens if we put in 16 characters. Okay, so now we have this like other scenario where we've put in a password that's clearly an incorrect password, right? That's not what it was checking for. It's told us that that's the wrong password. It's still given us root privileges and it did not crash the program. So it finished checking that password. We were given root privileges and the program finished executing normally. This is a bug, obviously. This is some sort of bug in our program. And this is the kind of stuff that you're going to be doing in Attack Lab, is trying to figure out how to manipulate these bugs so that you can get the program to do what you want to do, which is in this case, give us these root privileges and without breaking the program. Does anybody have any questions about that? So you'll get a little bit more into that stuff. And I hope that you start with Attack Lab soon. Like I said, it's not the most intense of your labs. It still requires some time and some reading. So give it a shot. I think it's fun. You're going to be doing this kind of stuff, which as you look through the programs in your debugger, you're going to be able to see what's happening in the stack as well. And I'm sorry, make some educated guesses or figure out how you can get past these like checkpoints. Okay. These actually, I think, are in your computers. They should be in your directory, this program. So you can put that one. There's actually another one that is a little bit simpler using, not simpler, but it's a little bit different using floating points. And we can start with that one and just look at that next time. And then I'm hoping that we can start working through some Attack Lab stuff and that we'll have some questions about that too. Okay, cool. Well, close that. And if nobody has anything else, I will let you guys go.
Hope everybody's been staying safe.
Yeah. All right, cool, guys. Well, have a good holiday. And yeah, I know. But enjoy the extra couple days where you don't have to tune into class stuff. And yes, take care of yourself. Do some mental recovery activity. And if you emailed me or if I haven't updated your Shell Lab stuff, it's because I just have been doing catch up since I got internet back. I'm going to do that right now. So if this afternoon, if I haven't like updated your score, as far as like if you turned it in, if I'd given you an extension and it doesn't look like I have yet, I'm doing all that right now. So if I haven't done that by this afternoon, if your score still looks funky, email me and I'll make sure that like I get on it. But I think I've got a handle on everybody who I need to change. So check that later and I will talk to you guys on Monday. All right, bye.
Adios.